put a piece of land to each one of your children. Well, I was on the Land Use Planning Commission for 7 years. Two of the members of that commission had eight children apiece, and I had five, and some of them had small acreages. Well, it wouldn't take long until they'd have their own community, of course. And this points up, and I would like to excuse enough to get my map. I think one of the things to continue to look at, I don't know. This map showing how little land in the state of Oregon is truly agricultural land that we're trying to preserve. The Willamette Valley there is relatively small, and there are areas in California larger probably than that, the Livermore Valley, the Santa Clara Valley, are totally covered already. And perhaps we have to use a little persuasion, but the thing that we have found is that the farmers, at least in my area, they were against land use planning to start with. They wanted to do as they pleased. By God, we've already done it, it's going to be all right. They've totally changed their mind in the last few years because they've seen that their neighbor did as he pleased, and so he put up a trailer court. And I've got two of them within 2 miles of my place. This is a map of an area between Hubbard and Woodward, Hubbard and Aurora. This was a nice farm 10 years ago. There's 72 lots, and this is only part of it. There's more lots over here. A good farm, and this was put in on number one and two land is type of area that predominates in the area in which I live. And that's, of course, one of the reasons we brought land use planning in effect. Some people say, well, we believe in it, but we want to be able to do what we want to do when we want to do it. And it all sounds good until your neighbor beats you to it. I live about here. I have a neighbor over here that's a hog farmer. He's got about 140 acres. But he rents out all the land except about somewhere between 5 and 10 acres. His total hog operation is on that area. Now, in an EFU zone, presumably you can do any farm activity any place in that zone. Now, if that hog farm was just perhaps a mile away over here, where there's a number of houses, this is also an EFU zone, but the county saw fit to allow a neighbor here that had approximately 3 acres on this side of the road, but on the other side of the road had 6 acres. And it was never going to let it go because this party also owned a wheat ranch in Wasco County. This person was over 80 years old, but they wanted a new house, so they traded off this land to a developer and got a new house. So we got 5 houses there now. In this map now is a section. It's section 3, 5 south, range 1 west. So that's just a mile square. But I brought it to show what happens when the land use planning isn't monitored. This, again, is EFU zone. We started out, well, you're going to have an RA zone. That's an ambiguous term, residential agriculture. So which predominates? Of course, the residential property predominates. Then we had EFU 20. Then they eliminate the 20, the EFU. Now this, it took this gradual process to realize the majority of the people what was going to happen and what was happening. In the meantime, some of the clever ones on legal advice began to divide up the land prior to the zone change. So right here we have 2 slightly over 1 acre pieces. This is part of a 40 acre piece. This 40 acres has 2 houses on it at the present time. One of them moved out of the city onto the land. The man that owns this property also owns a hardware and also owns a restaurant and bar, but he also owns 17 acres in another place with a very expensive home on it. So this poor man with his 40 acres, he divides off this land. Now it shows on the assessor's map, but there's no buildings there. There's strawberries here right at the present time. But if the laws are not so designed, you already have the potential for those additional homes. He has one son in one house and one son in the other house and moved out of Woodbury. He used to be a very good and successful farmer, but he also worked for the state because the McLaren School is only a half mile away. It joins right down here. But there is a place for the part-time farmer, but we have literally thousands of these places available at the present time. We do not need the further divisions. And any real estate person, I have to have a real estate broker's license myself. There are these places, are people that were going to do a lot of farming, and they chose berries, and it looked like a well-paying proposition until the last 3 years.
I'm going to try to summarize your remarks here. I want to get a couple of the people on here.
Now, here we have a cluster of houses. Here, and here's the 40 acres that has one house on it, 40 acres with no house. Here's an 80 with one house. Here's an acre and a third with two houses on it. And 40 without it. But to open up the criteria or to leave the criteria it is, some of this land, this 80 acres in here, three houses, three apartments on the 80 acres. Now, I'm a little leery of this because I happen to join it, and the gentleman owns an excellent farmer, done a wonderful job over the years, made a living on 10 acres for many years, and built up to 80 acres. Then he put on these apartments. Well, with his son now county commissioner, it doesn't make you feel real at ease. Real nice people. But he wants to grow houses now instead of farming because he reached retirement age.
One quick question.
Yes, sir.
What's the basic zoning on that? Is that EFU or
yes,
is it RR? It's EFU.
It's EFU and all the land around it is EFU.
Okay.
In North Marion County. Even on where there are now trailer courts, it's still EFU and their pre-existing exceptions, pre-existing conditions. But I think that I want to emphasize that I agree with the concept of the bill and that the wording, there may be minor changes in it and a word or two, and I think there's misreading into it, and the fact that it's misused, and it's not a worry of whether we're going to crowd farmers out. It's a matter of whether the additional homes are going to crowd people out that want to farm in any size operation. There's a full-time operation just north of Hubbard, 13 or 14 acres, and he's been there for a number of years. But when he gets through, he doesn't think anybody else will be able to do that. So he'd like to divide the land when he gets through. And if each of us would want to do that, well, one generation, we've had it.
Thank you very much. We'll call Clyde Ramsey, and then after that, Scott Ashford.
For the record, I'm Clyde Ramsey, and I'm speaking for Reagan Small Woodlands Association. I agree with Matt. The concept of the bill is great, but marginal lands tend to become timberland either on purpose or accidentally. And we feel Senate Bill 237 was written without sufficient knowledge of forest laws, forest policies, and problems unique to timberland. Passage of the bill as written would defeat the primary purpose of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is to promote good farm forestry. I have probably been in the land preservation business for more years than anybody in the state of Oregon. I started in 1950, preserving the lands under the Smallwood and the Smallwood Association. We think there is some major flaws in the bill. On page 3, line 40, we think ORS 215-203 should be amended to include the growing, propagation, and harvesting of timber. I think it's very important that when we're talking about farm use, we also talk about timberland use. Because if we don't, we're going to get in trouble with the small wooden people, and they are just as important as the farmers out there, and we farm that marginal land and have for years. The idea of having an income test for timber is unworkable. It just will not work. You put a dollar amount on, say, a 20-acre woodland, and that means the gross amount, that would have to gross $1,000 an acre a year for 40 years, and it can't do it. There's no way it can do it. Our zoning laws have created a lot of 20, 10, 20, 30, 40-acre parcels out there which should be growing timber. And most of them will be growing timber. And one thing about timber, you're going to have to harvest it someday. You just can't leave it, stay there and look at it, because someday it's going to blow down. And we feel that the woodlands can stand a little bit more housing density than land like Matt and Carl was talking about. Because a house will only take out a quarter of an acre. You have to have your access roads anyway. And which brings another point. I think it's a very important point. You take on page 2, lines 35 through 37, that 320-acre jewel that's in there. If I wanted to make a lot of money, if I was completely money-oriented and wanted to make a lot of money in a hurry, I would locate all of those parcels. Cut my timber and start buying those parcels. Because I'd make more money than I would off my timber by a long way. Because with the large parcel size in the EFU zones, it's going to drive those prices down, and consequently it'll drive the prices of the small parcels up. So you couldn't help but make a lot of money in a hurry. This is one of my big problems with this bill. I never would take advantage of my neighbor. I don't like to force him to do things that I wouldn't want him to force onto me. That's another problem I have with our zoning, the way it's written. I think we can do a lot better. I think we could do it through taxation with a heavy rollback and double the urban tax on non-farmhouses. That would be discourage the parcelization of that property out there, and the people that would be doing the parcelization would be the only ones that would be angry. The way it is now, there's a lot of angry people. We have people in Eastern Oregon want to secede from the state. I was over there Monday. That's why I wasn't at the hearing here. I was over there Monday, and every place I went, I couldn't even go fishing without somebody saying, hey, you're from the valley. What's going on with land use planning down there? And they're serious, those people are over there. I did a lot of listening. I didn't do any talking. I should have probably. Another thing that's wrong with this bill, I would call it a lawyer's Cadillac bill or a lawyer's full employment bill, because that's certainly what it is. I see we have a lot of litigation now in our land use planning. I see a lot more if this bill would pass. I think I will say again that it's probably a good idea. A lot of things in here is a good idea. But I think it's going to need a couple of years of study. The small wooden people, I don't have the time to spend with it this session. And I know the rest of the small wooden people don't have the time to spend with it. If we would have 6 months or a year, maybe we could make a canary out of a turkey. I don't know. But it'd take at least that much time to be able to. I've had 35 years experience with reading bills, and this is the worst one I've ever seen. This income test, I have to come back to it. There's no way timberland can meet an income test. There's just no way they can. It's the time to grow that tree is just too long. There might be one way that we could make this bill work, and that's to recognize the growing of timber as an agricultural endeavor. We might be able to make it work that way, but until we get those changes made, this bill will not work. It'll destroy the Small Wooden Association. It'll destroy what I've worked for 35 years so far, and I don't want to see it happen.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll certainly keep that in mind, those comments. And there is a section on taxation, too, which will be dealt with, I believe, on Monday. And you may want to come back on Monday, too, and address that.
Yeah, there is another thing that with zoning for forest land. It does no good.
Is it in the bill?
To preserve the forest land base without doing something to keep that forest out there. Because you might be just preserving a field of stumps. Because the growing of timber is a volatile issue. And there's a lot of tree farmers out there that are sitting on the fence wondering what's going to happen. And if something like this would pass in its present form, you would see a lot of stumps, I know. Because I know those people probably better than anybody in the state knows.
Thank you. Scott?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Scott Ashton with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. The written testimony is not mine. It is the testimony of our legislative director, Don Schellenberg, and he would have to defend it. I looked it over.
Wonderful language, Don, every once in a while.
I think most of what he noticed has been taken care of with amendments already proposed, and I might say that we have policy which supports the amendment proposed by Hector McPherson and Dick Benner dealing with the mobile homes on page 6, lines 4 through 9, as amended. He does have a concern which I do know a little bit about, but I think I can explain part of it. We're talking about page 7, lines 16 and 17. I think we're talking actually about lines 14 through 17, in particular lines 16 and 17 on page 7. He said that the wording says a dwelling not provided in conjunction with farm use may be located on land unsuitable for the production of livestock, and then he goes on to say that all land is really suitable for the production of livestock. This is true in some regards because of the stupidity of cows, especially beef cattle. I have actually seen, went up rounding up strays a few times, but I've seen cows grazing on the yellow line. I've seen them do it. And when you're riding around a combine all day, you get to thinking about things, and you think in great depth. And I thought about that.
Those are the real thin cows and the yellow tongue.
I don't know why. Somebody said that there might be. Somebody said there might be salt on the line, but I mean they go anywhere. Cattle go anywhere. So you can raise cattle just about anywhere. And so there's a point to that. But I'll go if I can just through the provisions of the bill. I was also on the EFU zone task force of the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use, and came up with 234 with the other participants of the task force, and that really is what we have in sections 5 through sections 6 of the bill. And we supported that by policy at the time and continue to do so. On page 5, we start off with section 5, the permitted use section, and we have no problems with that at all. On line 38, when we talk about the life estate, we don't have a policy that specifically addresses that, so I'd say we have a no position, but in general, we're in favor of taking care of the family on that, and so I would say we'd have no position to support on that. On the next page, page 6, I've already addressed lines 4 through 9. I would like to point out one thing, though. I have heard from numerous farmers the idea that a mobile home should be allowed before a permanent dwelling because you can remove it. And there were some questions about the enforcement and the difficulty of enforcement that Senator Starkovich mentioned. There's a good way to enforce it if you discover a mobile home on a place and it's not right. It's mobile. You can take it off, and that's a pretty interesting form of enforcement. And it's a lot easier to do that with a mobile home than with a permanent dwelling.
You can paint it yellow on the cows.
Yeah, the cows can even. On page 7, then we would propose a small amendment, and it's just a grammatical. Proposal on line 12 of page 7, if we could delete the word major. That would be the amendment. Just delete the word major. That is, by the way, a proposed amendment of our Natural Resource Committee made up of farmers throughout the entire state. We have no problem with the changes, lines 14 through 17. But now we get down here to the lines 27 through 31, and we had. It seems like almost an organized effort to take shots at this proposal, and I want to defend it a little bit. One charge against this proposal, this is the proposal that says the governing body of a county or its designate shall not approve a proposed division of land to create parcels for farm uses defined in 215-203 unless it finds that the proposed division of land is appropriate for the continuation of the existing commercial enterprise within the area. And you remember that the two major criticisms that were made of this in testimony today was first that this does away with minimum lot size. I am not an attorney, I'm a historian, but I can read English and I hope I can reason correctly, and I can't agree with that. The language says that unless the governing body finds that the size of the parcel is appropriate for the continuation of the existing commercial enterprise. Well, the minimum lot size is in effect a determination by the governing body that that's the size minimum necessary to continue the appropriate agricultural enterprise, and therefore the county's already made that determination. Moreover, they can change the ordinance. So I can't see where it does away with minimum lot size. Because the minimum lot size itself is a determination by the county that says that's the minimum size necessary to continue the existing agricultural practice. The second criticism was that this was from another person, was that this causes confusion because crop patterns change, and we'll change the use of that land, the cropping pattern, say from a wheat to a grass seed, and then possibly 10, 20 years down the line to another crop. Maybe kiwi fruit can grow here, and we can change that. Well, you see, this is the idea of planning. I have to disagree with that criticism, too. this provision here would allow that to occur without tying it down to an artificial number. And planning is an organic sort of a process. It goes on. It changes over the years. As people change that cropping pattern use, the county governing body should change its the size of the lot that's necessary to continue that type of agriculture. We think it adds flexibility, and we disagree with the criticism that it would confuse matters as crops change and cropping patterns change. Going down to line 38-39, we have no problem with any of these changes before then. We strongly support, and I stress strongly support, the change in lines 38-39. Farm Bureau policy, believe it or not, is opposed to all additional non-farm uses and exclusive farm use zones. And I know that that's a very... it's sort of etched in concrete and everything, but that's the way that the majority of our members feel. This policy is arrived at very democratically. It's been in the policy book for many years, and we have a process whereby the House of Delegates or the Resolution Committee can change that. We review it every year at the House of Delegates meeting. It's been reviewed, believe me, year after year. The annual debate comes up on whether or not we should throw the policy out or not, and we don't throw it out. We keep it by about a 2-to-1 margin. So we strongly support that provision. And the rest of the changes that were appropriate for discussion tonight, we support those as well. So in terms of the uses, we support 237. And of course, you excluded from discussion certainly the other. And we'll be back to talk about them later. Thank you very much.
Any questions, Senator Cohen?
There isn't anybody else there. Thank you, Scott. There are four people left. Let me ask you this. I'll take you in the order that you signed up. If you would rather come back Friday, when there's a full committee or a fuller committee, you can do that. First would be Peter McDonald.
He left.
Okay. Tom Brawley.
I can't make it right, so I'll talk to you today.
Okay. And then Cliff Kanegi.
I can't.
Okay. And Charles Clock.
Charles Clock left, but then he's still here.
Okay. So just Tom Brawley will finish up for this evening. Welcome.
Thank you. I know why you said that, because I'm the guy you're looking for.
Yeah.
The last one.
Maybe for today.
Oh, for today, right. I appreciate the fact that you remaining committee people have stayed, at least to hear us. I farm here in Marion County and am particularly interested in the EFU and the zoning, which it seems to me this bill directly addresses. The testimonies you've heard from people, I believe, to a great extent, either, of course, we're on one side or the other. And when I say that, I might refer in farm terms as of the fence, because quite frequently on the other side of the fence, it looks greener. And it seems to me that that's what's happening. People that are on the other side of the fence from the EFU zone are looking over into the EFU zone and thinking, there is a green pasture, I want some of it. There is adequate amount of land that for the small farmer, for the part-time farmer, for the country estate in the area. What we're looking at is just to protect this EFU zone land so that farming may remain a viable interest and a viable business in Oregon. So most of these provisions that we're talking about, if a person thinks that there's not enough land available, they're looking over into the EFU zone, and it isn't necessary, because there is land available in other areas for the small farmer, for the person who wants to grow grapes and other things. And I say that from experience. I am a farmer, and I'm also a licensed landscape contractor. And I do business in three counties right around Salem here. And part of my business is to do custom farming work as well as landscape work. So I work on country estates. I work on 5-acre estates, 10 and 20-acre parcels. It's been my experience, and I have in these parcels farmed and done custom farming and done landscape work on better ground than I personally farm. And I farm between 100 and 300 acres, depending on the year. It's my experience that the small farmer, the person that owns the 5 acres, buys it because they have the country, the American dream, and want to farm it. They don't know how. They have very poor weed control. They cannot afford machinery to do the operation that they feel they would like to do. And quite frequently, this dream falls a little short, and it's unfortunate, but it's true. And I've seen it, and it can be verified. And so then the person wants to further subdivide this land into smaller parcels, and we have this dilemma that grows out of this. I don't want to see that happen to the EFU ground. It's happening in the other ground, and I don't think it needs to happen in the EFU ground. It really shouldn't happen here. So basically, I said, I'll just cut it short and leave it at that. It seems to me that this measure addresses predominantly the EFU, and we try to protect the EFU zone with a stronger zone, and we're